owned furniture maker from Pennsylvania who had also sued. Coming up next is more Talk Radio with our hosts Cecil Prescott and Celeste Carey. Talk Radio with both passion and compassion. Today's guest is Shauna Redman, author of Anthem, Social Movements and the Sound of Solidarity in the African Diaspora.
I'm Monica Beamer.
And I'm Mike Crenshaw. We're KBOO's new co-station managers. We're excited to be a part of the KBOO community. We're starting a new weekly feature on Wednesdays at 5:45 p.m. News from the Boo will give you an inside look into what's happening at KBOO, including upcoming events, station news, special programming, and future goals and plans for the station.
Be sure to tune in this Wednesday and every Wednesday after the KBOO Evening News for News from the Boo, an insider look into your community radio station.
KBOO Board of Directors elections are coming up. We are currently looking for board candidates with skills in finance, new media, and nonprofit development. If this sounds like you or someone you know, you can download a copy of the board candidate package at kboo.fm. You can also get a copy by coming by KBOO in person at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The deadline to turn in your application for the KBOO Board of Directors is midnight on July 30th. Thank you for supporting your grassroots, listener-powered, community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven.
How little are we
weary?
from the gloomy past till now we stand where the white gleam
of the white
bright
star is cast.
This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott.
My name is Celeste Carey. You are listening to Euro Community Connection at 90.7 here in Portland. This is KBOO Portland. If you are in ports and parts south, you are listening at 104.3. If you are east, along the Columbia River Gorge, it's 91.9. And the ether, KBOO.FM.
We are hoping to speak with author Shannon Redman, who is the author of Anthem, Social Movements and the Sound of Solidarity in the African Diaspora. And that's why we play James Weldon Johnson's Lift Every Voice and Sing. If we are able to reach her, we will have that conversation. It is an important volume that allows us to see the relationship between movement for liberation and music, the importance of the culture in the liberation movement of African people here in the United States and indeed throughout
the
diaspora. In her book, she also writes about the Marcus Garvey UNIA and the Ethiopian anthem, and also how these songs have an impact not only here in the United States, but throughout the world in terms. So hopefully we'll have that conversation with Shannon Redman. But in the meantime,
There's been a couple of news items that we thought we might discuss while we're waiting for her.
Well, you know, it's always June is a month of lots of things, you know.
Opportunity.
People graduate, people get married,
mm-hmm.
and the Supreme Court makes
decisions.
last year, about this time, there were a number of decisions on the Supreme Court, and this year it is the case also. And the Supreme Court has this act for drama. So, you know, the decisions.
Well, they wear black robes. Come on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, that's dramatic and gothic in itself.
Gothic in itself. So, you know, certainly they wait to the last moment, and, you know, these guys.
They have
these,
this anticipation.
These people are actors. So, one decision that people have been waiting for is the decision around the Hobby Lobby case,
yes.
In terms of the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, as the Supreme Court is known to rule in recent years, and this is why I think elections are important. 5-4
decisions.
Well, as
decision. Much as they can, yeah.
It's a 5-4 uh-huh. decisions, and we know, you know, you can know how people are going to rule.
Almost is right there in front of you.
You know, it's 4-4. Mm-hmm. Kennedy is usually the one who goes back and forth. But
the swing vote.
But this is why decisions are ruled. So their decision was, as Steve read earlier, in terms of the Hobby Lobby, was that closely owned, family-owned corporations, and, you know, corporations are all persons in these times, can limit access to medical care in terms of contraception because of the beliefs of the owners.
Mm-hmm.
I saw one commentator, and this is all happening as we speak, who said that it may not be as drastic as we think. Because Alito, the Supreme Court Chief Justice, who wrote the opinion, made it very clear that it's only for closely owned family firms. As I try to bring up the decision.
I'm struggling here, too. My Wi-Fi is not Y.
What did we do before? Depending. There was also another decision that the Supreme Court made that impact public unions. And this is the Harris versus Quinn. I'm saying that partial public employees cannot be required to contribute to unions. And according to SCOTUS blog, the 5-4 decision is a substantial obstacle to expanding public employee unions, but does not gut them. SCOTUS blog also notes that the case does not involve full-fledged public employees, but rather says that union bargaining fees cannot be imposed on employees that are not full public employees. And I believe that case dealt with home care workers in Illinois. Where SEIU is trying to organize home care workers. So decisions around the unions and decisions around the Affordable Care Act, those are decisions that the Supreme Court announced today and will have an impact on many people in many ways. You might have some thoughts about this, about the Supreme Court. Please join us. Give us a call at 503-231-8187 or email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com.
And especially if you are a non-union worker who either benefits from the union. And by non-union worker, what I mean is someone who hasn't necessarily signed their card agreeing, but you still benefit from it. It's important to hear and to bridge those gaps. And then also, as someone who works and in a non-union house and prefers it that way, we're really interested in hearing what some of the challenges are nowadays to unionism and the membership in unions and the perception of what unions can and can't do for you in the modern working era.
So reading from AP reports, AP writes, the Supreme Court says public sector unions can't collect fees from home health care workers who object to being affiliated with a union. The justices on Monday said collecting the fees violates the First Amendment rights of workers who are not union members. The ruling is a financial blow to labor unions that have bolstered their ranks in Illinois and other states by signing up hundreds of thousands of home health care workers. The case was brought by group of Illinois in-home care workers who said they didn't want to pay fees related to collective bargaining. They claim that the fair share fees violate their constitutional rights by compelling them to associate with unions.
Despite the fact that they benefit from them.
Yeah.
Because it's not like you can secede from the benefits of the union. In other words, you still get the pay that's been negotiated by collective bargaining. You still get the benefits that have been received through collective bargaining. And you just kind of go along for the ride for free.
Mm-hmm. So, and come on, Wi-Fi. Work.
and I'll tell you what we did before Wi-Fi. We just didn't have, we had a book or we had older information from the newspaper. What are those?
Newspapers. So I'm reading an article from the Huffington Post, authored by Laura Bassett and Ryan Riley, speaking about the ruling in the Hobby Lobby case. They write an opinion authored by Justice Samuel Alito. They ruled that the administration has failed to show that the contraception mandate contained in the Affordable Care Act is the least restrictive means of advancing its interests in providing birth control at no cost to women. The opinion was written narrowly so as only to apply to the contraception mandate, not to religious employers who object to other medical services like blood transfusions or vaccines. The Affordable Care Act contains a provision requiring most employees to cover the full range of contraception in their health care plans at no cost to their female employees. Hobby Lobby, a Christian-owned craft supply chain store, and Conestoga Wood Specialty Store, a Pennsylvania wood manufacturer owned by a family of Mennonites, challenged the contraception mandates on the grounds that it violates their religious freedom by requiring them to pay for methods of contraception they find morally objectionable. So that's what we hear today from the highest court in the land. Let's see what you have to say. Let's go to a caller, Miriam. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Hi. So this was a long time ago, but I worked for General Motors in 1980, 1981. I was an office worker, but I was really happy that I got benefits from, you know, we got the same benefits as the factory workers did. And in those days, they were really good benefits. You know, like we got 4 weeks of vacation instead of 2 weeks. We got vision and dental care, which wasn't offered very much in those days. I mean, just lots of things like that I really appreciate. And we didn't belong to the union, didn't have to pay union dues. I wished many times that I could have belonged to a union, but I didn't. There was no opportunity for, for what I was doing. I was a computer programmer.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you mentioned was getting the benefits even though you weren't part of the union and did not have the opportunity to unionize. And, you know, one of the things that's really interesting about these two cases is the fact that you have that kind of intersection right there. The fact that without there being the precedent of collective bargaining on the premises and with the company, it probably would not have given you that opportunity. In terms of today's workplace, do you see any change in attitudes for those who work in an environment maybe where they don't have benefits or they could if they would unionize and there's no real opposition from management or owners?
That there's no real opposition?
No, if we know there's opposition. I'm talking about for people who work in an environment where it's not unionized, but there isn't any serious opposition from the owner. Some places they just aren't unionized and nobody's telling them not to.
Okay, so
I mean, if you don't experience it, that's all right.
No, you're wondering what the attitude is. Yeah,
employees? that you've seen. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been out of the workforce for so long.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm 67, and Yeah, I've been retired for more than 10 years.
Oh, well, that's a blessing then.
Well, I'm fortunate. I mean, I'm very lucky. I was in the workforce when things were much better. We got treated with more respect in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's terrible the way these young workers get treated. And I hope they can unionize more. I don't know what the solution is.
All right.
But I would think that people would see the benefits of unionizing. I don't know. There's so much propaganda against it, though, in the media and everything. It's sad. But, I can't speak to that specifically.
All right.
I was very happy that it definitely benefits everybody when there's a union, whether they belong or not. So,
Thank you so much, Miriam.
Yeah,
Bye-bye.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. My name is Cecil, and I'm here with Celeste.
Good morning.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We're speaking this morning about the Supreme Court and its decisions on a couple of cases today. One is in regards to the Affordable Care Act and also in terms of unions. Miriam just spoke of her experience of benefiting from the work of the unions, even though she was not a union member, and she was speaking of her situation, but also what that meant for her. One thing to note, she said how union benefits, and there's so much that we benefit from unions, and there's the popular poster that you see, we're thankful for the unions because we have 5-day work week.
We have a 40-hour working week.
Children don't have to work.
Yes. There's the opportunity for benefits. There's salary support.
Mm-hmm.
And there are rules that govern how you can and can't be fired and promotions, et cetera, et cetera.
So unions, as she mentioned, they are under attack. So the Supreme Court rule in terms of how home health care workers and in terms of their organizing, they also made a ruling on the Hobby Lobby case about contraception. And I thought it was interesting that it only applies to contraception, not to companies, who might have objections to blood transfusions or vaccines, which on the surface, to me at least, tilts, since Congress is not to make any rule in support or against a religion, it tilts to a certain religion in terms of contraception, and there is a minority religion which has objection to blood transfusions, and there are many people across the spectrum who have objection to vaccines, but it only applies to contraception, which seems to me, on the surface at least, having read through the opinion, that it tilts favoring one form of religion. We have a caller with some wisdom to share with us. And as Steve is talking to someone else at the same time, so let's go to the next caller.
Michael, good morning.
Michael, you're there.
I'm here now.
Yes.
Okay.
Your thoughts.
Okay. Well, I work for a large public institution that has a lobby, and so I'm under this thing where I'm required to pay the fair share because I get the benefits that the union has negotiated. And this would be okay with me if the union didn't engage in a lot of political things that are pretty much opposite to my politics. And
okay.
It just annoys me to send money to them, given that their politics are opposite to mine. I think that the fair share requirement should go along with a stay out of politics and just take care of the workers at the institution policy. And if that was the case, I would have no objection to paying the fair share.
So how would you define politics?
And
in terms of, because what I would think part of what unions do in terms of they have to advocate for certain issues that benefit, say, you as a worker, but that might involve
Might involve supporting a candidate who is only marginally align with the union's values as it is. Sometimes you kind of go along to get along. And so define what it is you mean by politics.
What I mean by politics is taking positions on foreign policies of various kinds, supporting presidential candidates, in general supporting one party and opposing the other party. I want to say one more thing about what they do, which is like to make it really obnoxious. They give you this opt out where you can opt out of supporting your political efforts, and then they would refund a portion of the dues to you. And they make you write, get this, in the 21st century, a paper letter that has to be delivered to the union office every year to opt out. And if you forget, then you've opted in for that year.
Well, I'm not quite sure if I understand why that would be a burden, and I'm not quite sure if you are looking at only one aspect of what your dues do for you. The fact that you get a contract, one of the things that your dues allow is for the people who are part of that contract team to be able to take time off and negotiate with you for, or rather for management for that contract. Generally, if you're part of a union and you need to go and negotiate, the management or the owners of the company, they get that covered as part of their job duties. But the people who are typically part of the contract negotiating team are just ordinary workers like yourself, and so somebody has to pay their salary or they go without being paid. So that's one of the things that your dues take care of. I can appreciate the fact that you may not want your money to support candidates, but again, as I said, the candidates sometimes are chosen not because they're perfect, but because they marginally align with the needs of the workers. And so you may feel that a candidate is not good, but if in the union's executive committee or general membership who attend the union meetings, if they vote on that, and you as a fair share person don't get to vote because you opted out of it, they decide, the general membership generally decide who gets the campaign contributions. It's not just a few people who decide that. So, you know, what I would say might be in your best interest is become a full-fledged member and then voice your opinion at these meetings and let them know. You know, that's your money has some power in that regard.
Well, the way things are in that particular union, if I joined and was able to vote, it would be like one vote against the other 900 or so.
But that's an assumption. That's an assumption, and that would be part of the challenge, right? I mean, that's what America does.
It's democracy. You advocate for your position.
Yes, exactly.
Well, you know, I'm 67 years old, and I can tell which walls it might be worth knocking my head against. And that's not
sure, right.
Well, you have a point there. I can truly appreciate the pick your battles.
And let me just say one more thing about the letter. Why can't I just check off a box online someplace and they don't bother me anymore and I opt out every year? Why do I have to not only write them a letter, but it can't even be email? I have to put it on paper? I mean, what century is this?
You know, sometimes a hard copy is important, but again, I would just, you know, a solution was from our engineer, just print up a bunch of them, keep them in a file, mail them out.
Well, you know, at that point, it's not any more trouble than printing one out every year. It's more trouble to keep the file and a year later remember that I have it and end up with five files like that.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call.
Sure. Bye.
You're listening to KBOO. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We're speaking about the Supreme Court rulings this day. Give us your thoughts. Let's go to our next caller.
Good morning, Pat. Okay. Good morning, Dalton. Good morning, BJ.
Yeah, I'm here. I think unions are wonderful. I wouldn't have any property or a home to be retired in a wheelchair in if it wasn't for unions. Are you there?
Yes, yeah. We are. We're listening.
Thank you.
I was in the military, not much of a union there for many years, but I was, and I learned everything I know by, by do-it-yourself. I mean, I went to college on the GI Bill later. However, I want to say unions backed me up when I was in defense contractor work because I invented things, and the bosses get a little problem. They want to control people, jealousy up at supervisors. Mm-hmm. So there is a tremendous amount of backlash from bosses to control other people. And if they think somebody is intelligent and could have a patent, I invented things at various companies. And it's, you know, I got $15,000 for one invention at Hughes Electronics. And it was only because of unions and the help that they gave. Because the little person is very insignificant against the huge, none clear. You don't know who owns these corporations now.
That's true.
And that, by the way, they don't even live in the United States. They own islands offshore. I think Bush has two islands named after his daughters. And they have so much money, and they think this is power. The real power is our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. And I'll leave you at that. And think about, I'm in a very paralyzed situation now with my back, and due to these people that tried to put you down. But I don't want to go into that because proving it is against corporate law firms. I mean, look at the medical thing in this country. The reason doctors run to big hospitals is because legacy can protect them. They have huge umbrella corporations, so you can't sue them, of lawyers, of law firms.
Certainly.
And they make tremendous mistakes. They made one on me, and it crippled me for life. I guess. I want to think positive. And my positive statement with you now and Cable is unions.
Okay.
We must have them. If we don't have them, we'll have another 50,000 kids that nobody wants them.
And nobody supports them. You're right.
Yeah, this is what's about. They don't have unions, and they have children all the time. They have say more, have more kids, have more. Or no birth control, well, you know, it's a question of then you're depletishable. You are then, you could be just exterminated, you know, and then you're back. That's what these wars are about, is corporate rule.
Ray, hey, thank you for calling and for sharing your thoughts.
If you, I'll come down there in my wheelchair.
Okay.
All righty.
Great. He made the observation in terms of power. There seems to be a way in which a lot of corporate speak is against the working person and unions in particular, and saying, well, you know, the individual has right. Why should they speak for me or against me, as if the individual, as the last caller just noted, going against corporate power, you need power yourself, and that's has been historically when workers organize together. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We're speaking about the Supreme Court rulings on Hobby Lobby and also on unions. Give us your thoughts as we continue our conversation this morning. My name is Cecil Prescott.
My name is Celeste Carey, and you're on KBOO Portland.
And we'll go to our next caller.
Good morning, Pat. Hello,
yes.
Pat?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry, okay. I got off. Sorry about being long-winded. I just wanted to give you a little history of my father. So he saw the coming of the unions and stuff. And he worked for General Motors, and he used to talk about it a lot. The reason they got their benefits was because the company had to match the union's benefits that everybody fought for.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And he was he's a very open-minded guy, and so he just thought that the unions were great because General Motors would not have their benefits if it wasn't for the unions that the people fought for.
Yes. It wasn't through their generous goodwill.
He gave me a little history on it. He said that, you know, I mean, the unions, you know, had to be tough because they had to fight the bosses, you know. So, you know, it started out, it was sort of a rough deal, you know. But
So let me ask you, as your father taught you about unions in the past, do you think that we can need unions today?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Considering that nobody's making a living wage and people don't have benefits, especially for, you know, the children and old folks and stuff, you know what I mean? And, you know, when people can't make enough money to pay the rent and eat food and they work a 40-hour week, that's, you know, that's just not fair, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and
well,
you know, what else can you say?
Well, I want to thank you so much for your call, and especially from now I'm assuming that your father worked as a union member.
No, general. See, he was in parts, truck parts.
Ah, okay.
So he wasn't in was assembling anything, and I don't know about the factories. Were the factories unionized? Because he was mostly sort of like,
My father worked in for Chrysler, and
okay.
They were, I know the line workers in assembly plants were unionized, but you know, union spread in different aspects and different times and different parts of a business. So whereas, you know, your assembly might be unionized, I'm really surprised, but, you know, truck parts may not, like you said.
Yeah, well, yeah, you see, he was never in the union, but he was a big supporter of the union because he would have not had his benefits, which carried out through his whole life. He did mention that the powers that be tried to nick away at it from the time they got the, you know, their package.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
They tried to nick away at it as the years went on.
Well, and as unions have to be vigilant because corporations or businesses will disavow. But thank you so much for your call.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys, and it's very, very relevant, especially in today's situation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO, here in Portland. This is More Talk Radio, and today Cecil and I are speaking of the Supreme Court of the United States rulings that came through today on the opportunity for unions to collect dues from partial union workers, and also the opportunities for closely held corporations and businesses to not pay for contraception and birth control and for part of the benefits.
Yes,
now,
ma'am.
You know, here's the thing that I would have to read the Supreme Court blog, the SCOTUS blog, for. There's an intersection there in more than one way. One is if you have benefits as part of a package that's offered by a non-union house, I could see where you might fall under this this decision and have it have some measure of relevance. I wouldn't appreciate it, you know, and I don't support parts of it, but I can see how you would fall under it because you don't have any collective body bargaining for a contract for you, you know. But if you're in a closely held, I imagine then that there's probably no union. I used to work for Federal Express. Now, at the time, they were not unionized, but we benefited from the same salary structure that union houses had, such as UPS. And so we set competitive wages with the idea that we wouldn't need to unionize.
Right.
Now, the interesting thing about it was later on, the pilots unionized.
Mm-hmm.
Because they felt as though there were certain aspects of their work environment that were in jeopardy. And so, you know, sometimes people think of unions as kind of grubby workers, you know, hard-working, blue-collar, grubby peoples. You know, the point is, regardless of how you think of a union is people working, who are doing work that has dignity and need some support.
Well, and, mm-hmm. and point in fact, and since the union movement has been destroyed to a large part in this country, those and so you mentioned the blue collar mm-hmm. people. I mean, the only people who are unionized to some degree are public employees, and many of those are like
being eroded.
Being eroded, but also like teachers and, mm-hmm. and social workers. So
and professionals.
So mm-hmm. rather than the the blue collar folks, my dad was a butcher and was a union. Rather than those people being benefiting from unions, those are the jobs that are being destroyed. And maybe there might be some connection with the. With the state of the economy and the destruction of the union movement here. But let's see what our wise
listeners think.
Let's go to Garrett. Good morning, Garrett.
Good morning.
Hi. I recently lost a legal battle when I was partaking in helping to form a union recently. I'm not really going to go into details of when and where, but I learned a lot of things about the process of forming a union while going through that. One in particular is that you don't really get much protection, if any at all, when you're in the act of starting to form a union. So you can get fired and not get your job back.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That is true.
And one of the things that really upset me, though, is that they told us that we would have some level of protection and that they would help us
Who?
When we did get fired.
Oh, the unions?
The AFL-CIO.
Uh-huh.
But when they did that, they said the only people that'll get fired are the ones who already have a foot in the grave anyways. And they did that so that when people did get fired, like me, and I did not have a foot in the grave, I actually had commendations and no write-ups, they could just say, oh, well, he already was in trouble anyways, and wash their hands of it.
Mm.
But there was a guy there who had been a Teamster before and actually really worked for the Teamsters in political efforts. And one of the things that he told me was that the Teamsters had actually worked against the people in regards to getting socialized medicine. That the Teamsters put up a front like they were supportive of it, but did so specifically so that they could sit on their hands and do nothing, making it kind of sabotaging the effort from within to get socialized medicine for the country, because that would have taken away their greatest bargaining point, which is that they will help get you medical as an employee.
So did you buy, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but did you like verify that there was any meat to these statements? Because that's a pretty strong statement to say it's from somebody who is allegedly a union worker while you all are trying to unionize, because that kind of contradicts your effort is what I'm looking at.
I know. What I'm trying to say is that it's really messy, and it seems like the difference between, Republican or Democrat as far as, going union or not going union. Mm-hmm. If you don't go union, that's as bad as just being Republican. But if you do, you're still in something that's not completely pure.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you need to be aware of that, and you need to really watch yourself, because you might buy into this whole everything is going to be wonderful attitude, and then you're going to let your guard down and you're going to get stabbed.
Well, that's true of any human effort. You must go in with your eyes open. And you're right, it is messy, but by the same token, one of the things that you look for is your wing and a prayer. Yes, and due diligence when you get involved. Now, I'm really sorry to hear that your unionizing efforts failed, and especially if you didn't get the support.
Fail.
Oh, so you did. The group did get the union, but you ended up getting fired?
I did.
Uh-huh.
But I still have family in there, and now they have a contract, and so I don't have to worry about my family. I just have to worry about myself.
Well, but, my concern is then, you know, was there any recourse once the group got unionized for working?
There was supposed to be, but no one bothered to help me because there were, they said 22 different union negotiations going on at the same time, and they could not prioritize a single person over all of these large groups which were trying to get their contract. There was just no hands available. I went and got my own lawyer. I went through Boley. Mm-hmm. I went through OSHA. I tried to fight it, and we need better laws and protections, you know, aside from just unions. Unions use the same resources and laws a lot of the time that the rest of us would.
That's
they
true.
Just happen to be able to afford to do these fights because they have lawyers, they have resources.
Right.
It's so awkward, it's so set up so badly that the burden of evidence is too difficult to meet, especially when the Freedom of Information Act has absolutely no teeth whatsoever. You can request information, you can demand it, you can throw a fit like a baby, and that's about all you can do. Because they will take that form, they will wipe themselves with it, and throw it in the trash. If they do not give you the information that you have requested under the law, nothing happens to them.
Well, this sounds like something that requires more time in going into, because I think it's fascinating in terms of your experience, which may be atypical or typical, we're going to have to move on to the next caller. Okay.
But I do want to just say, you know, I have a lot of admiration for you for taking matters into your own hands and trying to move forward. That takes a lot of guts, having been there myself. So thank you very much, and thank you for your call.
Thank you for the topic.
Uh-huh. Bye. Bye-bye.
And this is More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO. And our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let's go to the next caller. John.
Good morning, John.
Hello. I feel uncomfortable taking a Marxist mentality of things. But if you look in history, you know, when the Nazis took over Germany, they didn't go after the Jews at first. They went after the trade unions.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah, and because they knew that they were organized. And also, they had a lot of, you know, they controlled labor, you know, so, you know, they get everybody into the same mentality. You all have to work together. Nobody can think different other than what, you know, the government wants you to think, or a political party.
Sure.
Yeah. And so it's looking at what's going on. You know, you had NAFTA, now you have CAFTA, now you're going to have TPP.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the final nail on the coffin as far as I'm concerned.
Well, let me ask you, you began your conversation by apologizing for
having a Marxist mentality.
Yeah, Marxism is making a comeback.
Well, it is, yeah, but I just feel, because you know that old saying, you know, think globally, act locally.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm a member of a union, and I get trashed for it. They said, well, union's only for people who don't want to work, and you're wasting your money and all that kind of stuff. And I said, you know, I'm just there because, you know, it's like a labor lawyer you can access.
Yes.
Because, believe me, I know what power corrupts absolutely, you know.
I've seen
it in my job place, even though it's a federal job, but, you know. But just getting back to the whole thing about labor, you know, when this final one, I'm really fixated on this TPP, when it finally kicks in, that is when people are going to really understand you better, you know, get together and, you know, like it's, when you call it safety in numbers.
Right. Now, for those who are not familiar with it, explain what the TPP is.
Well, it's called Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Right.
And it goes from one part of the globe to the other. Okay, let's go to the hemisphere over, well, not our hemisphere, but the southern hemisphere. You already have CAFTA that has all the...
So we're talking about free trade agreements that the United States have made.
Okay, anything that's considered, well, Pacific, that's the operative word. Mm-hmm. Okay, on our side, it's Chile, Peru, Ecuador. Okay, let's go 7,000 miles away. And here's the kicker, Singapore. And, oh, my gosh, when I heard Vietnam, Philippines, South Korea, Japan, game over.
Yeah.
I mean, Vietnam, which has the lowest wages, in Malaysia also. I mean, that's it. You know, you might as well hang it up, and you want fries with that?
Okay, excellent.
Yeah, okay, but that's what I'm just trying to say. Sure. People understand what's coming down the pike.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about either Big Jim in the plantations or serfdom.
I was about to say, we're talking about global serfdom. You hit the nail right on the head.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, mm-hmm. I don't want to get fixated on things, but I'm just saying, people really don't understand what's really going to happen.
Well.
And, you know, that, and it's really, I can't believe a Democratic president is supporting this.
Well, Clinton did, too.
Well,
it began with Clinton.
But, you know, I just, from a person who came... But, well, I guess Clinton came from poverty, too, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yep.
Sell out. Okay. Well, anyway.
All right.
On that note.
Yeah, bye.
Thank you.
But as the last caller mentioned, and I think the callers previous, these are signs of the need for people to continue to organize, whether in their workplace or in their communities, because... corporations aren't going away.
They're not going away.
Their powers and tentacles are massing power. And unless unless people find ways in which to create collective power, then game is over.
Game is over.
And as we began our conversation this morning by looking at the Supreme Court and its decision and these numerous 5-4 decisions, I don't think there's any one panacea in terms of getting what we need. And, you know, many people will poo-poo the electoral process. Our last caller reminded us that Democrats in name only are people who are pushing the so-called free trade agreements. Having said all of that, I think it's important to be a part of the process, including the electoral process, organizing in your workplace, making sure your community is a better place for all people, and to make the change. Our guest, who we hope to reschedule another time, her book was entitled Anthem, and it talked about the relationship between the movement for liberation and the cultural impact of music.
Especially arising out of the Black experience.
Especially. Mm-hmm. A couple of songs that she mentions is in terms of Lift Every Voice and Sing James Weldon Johnson and We Shall Overcome, which has a fascinating history.
Yes.
Not only about the Civil Rights Movement, but its foundation of Black women workers and their movement for unionizing.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things connect.
And, you know, and it's really important to recognize that there are these intersections. We're getting a signal here. We got one more call. Okay. Good morning, LJ. We just got a little time because we want to make sure we have time for our song.
Okay, this is going to be really short, sweet, and to the point.
Okay.
Okay. We're talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, can I give you a little information?
Quickly, yes.
This group is called the Alliance for Democracy,
mm-hmm.
www.afdpdx.org, phone number 503-232-5495. These guys are right on top of it. They have they have a zine called Justice Rising, and it'll give you the everything you need to know and more about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Thank you guys for the
excellent
show.
Thank you.
As always, you're right on the money.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you for that information. How are we going to end the program?
Well, we're going to end the program with Nina Simone. In 1969, thereabout, this song came out, and it was a point for us to recognize that the future still lie bright and shining before us, to paraphrase Langston Hughes. So we're going to end with that. Hopefully we'll have our guest, Dr. Shana Redmond, to discuss her book, Anthem. We'll hopefully reschedule her soon. But in the meantime, enjoy your day. Get out, get active, get collective, and support your people who are supporting your rights. That includes KBOO.
Young, gifted, and black. Oh, what a lovely, precious dream. To be young, gifted, and black. Open your heart to what I mean.
Mary Graham. My husband Donnie Graham, after being down 20 years in prison, was shot and killed by the Clackamas County Sheriff. My four beautiful daughters were taken by the state. I turned to drugs to ease the pain. Listen to my story of healing and hope on Prison Pipeline.
That's Prison Pipeline, June 30th at 6:30 p.m.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor and broadcast live from the 2014 Safeway Waterfront Blues Festival. The 27th annual festival will take place July 3rd through the 6th, 2014, at Tom McCall Waterfront Park. It will feature Greg Allman, Los Lobos, Lee Fields, and The Expressions among the 100-plus acts that will perform over the four-day festival. The 27th annual Waterfront Blues Festival will benefit the Oregon Food Bank. More information on artists, tickets, and the KBOO broadcast of the festival can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I wish I was a mole in the ground. Yes, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down. And I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, Portland's only community-owned and democratically run radio station. Welcome to the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Tom Becker. Joe Clement is our engineer. The Old Mole is dedicated to bringing you different perspectives on history, culture, politics, and current events than that of the corporate-owned conventional news media. Today on our program, Bill Resnick will be talking with Willie Groeschel, who is on the State Executive Board of the National Association of Letter Carriers. They'll be talking about the problems of the Postal Service, the campaign to destroy it, and the disaster that will result, as well as what needs to be done to save it. Following that, I'll be reading an article by Alyssa Rokert entitled Capitalism and Climate Change. Larry Bolden, our fiction critic, is here to talk about a book by Portland author Tom Spanbauer entitled Now is the Hour. Spanbauer is perhaps better known for his 1991 novel, The Man Who Fell in Love with the Moon. Concluding our program today, our engineer Joel Clement teams up with Brad Duncan, our radical musicologist, to talk about and listen to some of the music of Fred Ho. Fred Ho was a Chinese-American jazz baritone saxophonist, composer, band leader, playwright, writer, and Marxist social activist. He died this past April at the age of 57. We'll be listening to some of his music throughout the program. This coming Friday is, of course, the 4th of July, originally a day to celebrate the signing of the Declaration of Independence, which marked the beginning of the American Revolutionary War. Sadly, over the years, this day has become a jingoist celebration of American militarism. Before bringing on Bill Resnick, talking with Willie Groeschel of the National Association of Letter Carriers, I'd like to mark the coming 4th of July celebration of war with an anti-war song by Phil Oakes called I Ain't Marchin' Anymore.